Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Deep left into the bleachers, a two-run homer.
A swing and a miss, ball game.
Liftoff.
And history marches on, 22 consecutive wins.
From the sports desk of the Akron Beacon Journal and Ohio.com, this is Leading Off with Ryan Lewis, a podcast on the Cleveland Indians.
Santana makes the catch! Ball game! The Indians have won the American League pennant!
The Cleveland Indians are going to the World Series!
Now, Ryan Lewis and Dan Kadar.
True crime lovers are always looking for new and engaging content.
The Already Gone podcast covers stories from Michigan and the Great Lakes region. Cases you haven't heard before, like the Mayo Hunters or the murder of 16-year-old Justin Mello. Plus, better-known cases like the death of Jane Bishara and Illinois' own Lori Dan. Already Gone started in 2016, so there is a big back catalog for you to enjoy. Find Already Gone on Apple Podcasts, Good Pods, or your favorite podcatcher.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another edition of the Leading Off podcast. This is Dan Kadar from Ohio.com. Of course, I'm joined by the namesake of the podcast, Ryan Lewis. Ryan, how's it going?
It's going great. I have some more time on my hands for the next couple of weeks, so we could pod for 6 hours if you'd like to.
Well, we'll see how long we go. There are easily 6 hours worth of talking points we can get to. But we'll hammer out some today in our postseason, I guess, edition of the podcast here. The Indians, of course, are missing out on the playoffs this season, unfortunately, so we don't have a playoff series to preview, but there are a ton of talking points when it comes to the 93-win Cleveland Indians. They just missed out on the playoffs, of course, as you all know. Part of the problem this year was injuries. The Indians were befallen by a ton of injuries throughout the season, and one of them, Ryan, was to Corey Kluber, the ace of the starting pitching staff. He went down, and he only made 7 starts this year. But the Indians are picking up his option for 2020, and that's kind of interesting to me, Ryan, considering that Kluber will be 34 at the start of next season. Before he was hurt, he was not pitching well whatsoever. He had an ERA close to 6. He was only 2-3. His fastball has gone down a little bit. What do you think about the Indians bringing back Corey Kluber? The starting pitching still looked like the strength of the team, if you ask me, but for now, the plan is that he'll be back next season. What do you think of that?
Well, even with the, you know, the depth that they've built to a certain extent, and their starting pitching depth does look much better than it did on opening day. The options in terms of 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, which you're often going to need to get through a season. So, you know, even with all of the qualifiers that you said related to Corey Kluber, the start that he got off to, which was not very good, I think the club had plenty of confidence that a rebound was there, that it was a for the most part a temporary lapse, and their hope is that, you know, while of course they wish that it had not happened, that there is a blessing in disguise within, you know, his essentially lost 2019 season, and that his arm, he had shown that he could handle something like this, but his arm was very taxed. He'd thrown 200 innings in 5 consecutive seasons, and that's not actually including the 35 innings that he threw in the 2016 postseason. The fact that he's been an absolute workhorse for them for half a decade, And, you know, because of that, I think the value of the option, I would imagine that it was a relatively easy decision, even with, you know, the pitching depth that they have with Carrasco, Savali, Clevenger, Bieber, you know, Plesac, Yepy Rodriguez, Logan Allen is a top 100 prospect that they acquired in the Trevor Bauer deal, you know, on and on, even with all of those options.
Mm-hmm.
I think bringing back Kluber was a relatively straightforward decision. He also has a club option for 2021, which is somewhat valuable. And, you know, in the open market, he would still command a very high price tag. So that was kind of the first step, you know, in their offseason. I think it was a pretty straightforward one, but their hope is that Kluber can come back in 2020 and again give them 200 innings to where they're not having to rely on that depth as much as they did in 2019. And, of course, you know, Carlos Carrasco, dealing with what he dealt with, you know, also taxed that depth a little bit further. So their hope is that both of those guys can come back and contribute in a much larger way in 2020. And because of that, I think, you know, that price tag is well worth it.
Mm-hmm. We will get to stuff like what the Indians are doing at second base and some outfield stuff here in a little bit, but let's stick with pitching right now, Ryan. In particular, Carrasco, who you just mentioned. I thought he looked pretty solid when he was in relief after he came back from his leukemia situation. But, you know, there were some shaky spots, but he looks very intriguing there. And Brad Hand kind of struggled toward the end of the season. Do you think Carlos Carrasco could have a reliever role for this team, or is he going to go back to the starting rotation, do you think?
Well, they're going to try to have him as a starting pitcher. That will certainly be the goal. It's a really difficult situation and something that they're just going to have to keep monitoring. It's nothing that, to where they can go, okay, if we give him the offseason, he'll be fine. It doesn't quite work like that.
Right.
You know, they're going to have to see how he feels and kind of work from there and just react to that for the time being. The goal is certainly to see his return to the starting rotation. So you have Kluber, Carrasco, Clevenger, and Bieber, certainly as 1, 2, 3, 4, Savali, Plesac, et cetera, et cetera. You know, healthy, that's a very strong unit, but that's going to be a wait and see and react situation, you know, as we get closer to the spring.
Mm. I guess part of my line of questioning so far on the podcast here with Kluber and Carrasco is that I'm so very intrigued by Savali. You know, I would hate to see them start the season where he's not in the five-man rotation. And I said when the Indians made the big deals, I'm super intrigued by Logan Allen. So I'm not saying he should be on the opening day roster next season, but there are so many options for the Indians at pitching. That's why that makes this very interesting to me, how they treat all this going forward.
And if Carrasco ends up as a multi-inning weapon, that is a lot of value. You know, the Indians do have plenty of options in the bullpen coming back, but in terms of late-inning, high-leverage guys, there's a lot to sort out there still. You know, Brad Hand, he returned for a bit. There's quite a bit of confidence that he will be okay, that the Indians can kind of ward off, you know, what he dealt with this season. You have James Karinczak, who's a very intriguing option, just in pure raw stuff that he's been able to show. If you added Carrasco to that, you're taking away from your starting depth. But having a multi-inning guy, and he did struggle in this bullpen role early on, but he also seemed to find a comfort zone there as the season wore down, and he started to kind of find his rhythm in some high leverage spots. And it's either way, you know, Carrasco figures to play a really big role on next year's team. The goal will be as a starter, but they're just going to have to wait and see, you know, how he feels and how he's doing and what he can handle.
Mm-hmm. I think the biggest thing facing the Indians, to me, this offseason, so maybe I'm burying the lead as we get going here on the podcast, is what happens at second base for the Indians. Of course, they've now declined Jason Kipnis's option, which everybody expected. We recorded pretty much a whole episode on Jason Kipnis, so make sure if you haven't listened to that, go back and take a look for it. I think it's one of our better ones, but That begs the question of what the Indians do at second base. Jose Ramirez is obviously capable of playing there. He's open to playing there as long as he doesn't shift back and forth between second and third base, which I completely understand from his perspective. But it does beg the question to you, Ryan, what do the Indians do at second base? Is it simply moving Ramirez there? And if so, what do they do at third base? Or do you think they'll have something else in mind for second base?
Well, they're going to have a number of internal options. They'll have a number of external options. And they're entering this offseason, and especially on the position player side, with quite a bit of flexibility, in part because they'd like to get Franmil Reyes some extra time in right field to see if he could be a more viable option. Defensively in right field, he has not graded well at all and would need to see some substantial improvement there to really help his value. To where, as a DH, that's where his value is probably maximized. I think he has negative 11 defensive runs saved in his time in right field when he was in San Diego. So if you can take that element out and only get the value of his bat, that's probably kind of his top value thus far. But the Indians would like to get him some time in right field, which then opens up the DH spot. That could be something, something to keep an eye on this spring would be Bobby Bradley. If Bobby Bradley can have a great spring, and that DH spot, if they can make that available, that gives them some options there. In terms of the infield, you have Jose Ramirez who can play third or second. As you mentioned, he just doesn't want to move back and forth, but he can play either. The Indians have mentioned before that second base may be his better position. So they're not necessarily tied to one spot. They could cast a little bit of a wider net on the free agent or the trade market. But also having that DH spot open gives them even more options to where, position wise, they can be a little more flexible in terms of how they want to shape this roster. And another guy going into the spring that might be interesting is Yu Chang. If he can have a strong spring, especially offensively, that may make the Indians' decision a little bit easier. And also, the Indians have also not closed the door on Jason Kipnis returning. They've declined his club option for 2020, which means he'll have a $2.5 million buyout. But that doesn't necessarily mean that he can't return at a lower value than what the club option was. We've seen the free agent market the last couple of years has been pretty volatile for a lot of guys. So it remains to be seen how Jason Kipnis will fit into that. If he doesn't have much of a market, the Indians do have a need at second base, and he would certainly, he could solve that at a value that the Indians deem worthy. So they do have some options, and flexibility has kind of been one of their goals. If Kipnis does not return, that'll certainly be one of the positions that they keep an eye on. They do have some trade assets. Once again, in a somewhat similar way as last offseason, they're going to have a number of ways to kind of shape the roster to where they're not just looking for a third baseman or they're not just looking for a left fielder. They can cast a little bit of a wider net, and when you're a team in their position, that's at least a small positive.
Yeah, it really is, and if they do make a trade, you'd really have to think beyond prospects that they would throw in there. The Indians really have a glut of outfielders, particularly finally late in the season. We saw the return of Bradley Zimmer, who, I got to tell you, Ryan, I'm still intrigued by. I know he has some issues, with his swing and the stuff he just can't hit plainly, but boy, he's big and athletic. So I'm intrigued by him. Mercado's obviously set. Like you talked about, they want to try Reyes at right field. They have a ton of other bodies that they have in the outfield. What is your kind of outlook on the outfield beyond what they have in Reyes potentially trying him there? What are your thoughts there?
So they have a lot of different fits. And especially if Reyes doesn't take to right field well enough to play out there on a semi-consistent basis, at least, that opens that up even more. And Bradley Zimmer and Jake Bowers are both in interesting positions, where Zimmer like you mentioned, he went down and had surgery, but his swing before that, he had kind of gone off the rails a little bit and then got hurt. He had a number of setbacks this season. It was essentially a lost season for him.
Mm-hmm.
But when he did return, his stance had been altered in a pretty aggressive way. He was standing up a little bit more. He had clearly made some significant changes to his stance. So going into next spring, he's a guy who, in a way, is starting from, square one, to where the Indians will be able to get a look at him and see where he is. But he is intriguing. The combination of athleticism that he can bring will always be intriguing. And then Jake Bowers, Tito mentioned in the end of the season meeting with reporters that of all the exit meetings, Jake Bauer had one of the longer, if not the longest, exit meeting where they were talking with him about a number of things. And this was his first full season in the major leagues. He was sent down, but this was his first season really, breaking camp with the club. And he had some stretches where he really struggled, and he had a couple of stretches where he was striking out like 8 or 9 times in a 12 or 13 at bat span. He did flash some signs, and he showed some signs of why he was one of the Rays' higher ranked prospects for a long time. But he in large part struggled in his rookie season. And, Tito mentioned that they talked to him about, if he goes 4 for 4 one day, sometimes maybe he felt like he didn't need to go to the batting cage. Or if he went 0 for 4, he didn't want to out of frustration.
Hmm.
So I think one thing that seems to be a real, clear focus for them going forward is the establishment of some routines, the establishment of more of a foundation in his work to kind of find some consistency, which has been missing from his game. But the Indians are, certainly, at least to a certain extent, invested in him after the 3-team trade that part of that trade saw Yandy Diaz go to Tampa, and we watched him hit 2 home runs in the wildcard game last night. And that deal brought Bowers to Cleveland as a potential option, either in the outfield or play at first base. Those two guys will be interesting cases to watch this spring to see whether or not one or both can find more of a rhythm that they both lacked either due to performance or injuries in 2019. But the outfield is still going to be a real focus this offseason for the Indians. Yasiel Puig is a free agent. Again, it's largely in part going to come down to the free agent market in terms of whether or not he's an option to come back and return to right field, which would simplify a lot of things. But there are a number of things that would have to kind of align for that to happen. So once again, the outfields are going to be a focus, and the Indians have some internal options, but there are also plenty of question marks there.
Yeah, there really are. And it's funny, we've just gone through basically the offense and the starting pitching. It doesn't really sound like there's going to be a ton of new players on the team next season. Am I wrong thinking that? I mean, you look at the roster, you can easily pencil in a starting rotation. You can easily pencil in Brad Hand as the closer. You can easily fill up every position on offense. It doesn't seem like a team that's going to have a lot of turnover, does it?
Well, relative to league average, no. And especially if the Indians don't find, they're always open to some larger trade ideas,
mm-hmm.
and some options there. If they don't find what they're looking for, if they're not presented with something that really blows them away, not compared to league average. Jason Kipnis had Jason Kipnis and Dan Otero both had their options declined. Tyler Clippard is a free agent. Yelsey Puig is a free agent. Those are kind of the main guys. So if the Indians, if they don't move Francisco Lindor, which is always, one of the bigger focuses and will continue to be so until possibly right up until the 2021 trade deadline, which is the last point of it that the Indians would be able to deal him before he's eligible for a free agency, barring a contract extension. So with the exception of that, for the most part, these guys will be back. They need to have a lot of internal options that they can look to, and then they'll look to supplement that on the free agent market.
Yeah, it's interesting. And look, I plan to maybe talk a little bit about Lindor and ask you about that kind of stuff, but I I don't know. The more I think about it now while we've been conversing, it just seems like panic already with that, and it just seems premature still. I know the clock is ticking probably, and that you can't forget the comment, enjoy him, or whatever, while he's in Cleveland. But it still seems premature to me to talk about will they or won't they when it comes to a Francisco Lindor trade, doesn't it?
Yeah, with such a valuable piece,
yeah,
the Indians will certainly field phone calls.
Sure,
I don't think that's newsworthy or would be unquestionable. That being said, for a long time you looked at player control on this roster, how it fit into their payroll, contention windows, everything like that. For a long time, it looked like the offseason after 2020 was going to be a really interesting one, just with how everything lined up. And due to a couple of trades, a couple of options that have been declined, that really maybe key offseason might be after the 2021 season. Whereas if you want to keep these guys together, this group, and try to contend, you have Francisco Lindor under club control through 2021. You have Corey Kluber through the same year. Brad Hand, Carlos Santana. A few others are signed through 2022 or 23. But if the Indians want, they can hold on to Corey Kluber. They can hold on to Francisco Lindor, Brad Hand, et cetera, through 21. Lindor's case may even be a little bit simpler. If they don't get a trade offer that they just love, that they can't say no to, with Lindor, you can keep him for two more years, try to win a World Series. When he walks, the Indians will offer him a qualifying offer. He will decline it, and the Indians will at least get drafted compensation.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a great return for him, but if you're trying to maximize a contention window and go for it, you at least know on the back end that you will be getting some value for him. It's nowhere near what he would get on the trade market. But to do that, you also, you'd be pretty close to effectively giving up, and punting a chance at possibly making some noise in October, in a more substantial rebuilding move. So it will be, pretty much the number one thing to watch for the next 2 years. It's not going to go away. The option of trading him is always going to be there. But with this roster, I think the Indians are built to contend the next couple of years, and they'll be able to keep this going. After 2021, if they do hold on to these guys, we're getting pretty far ahead here, but if you still have Jose Ramirez signed to a very league-friendly contract for a couple of years, Carlos Carrasco as well. Some other guys who were under club control through, 2022, 23, 24, which include, Bieber, Reyes, et cetera, et cetera. So it's an interesting way that the Indians can go about trying to maximize this contention window and or shorten their rebuilding window, which is on the horizon at some point. But the Indians have been trying to extend this contention window, and the Trevor Bauer trade did exactly that, or at least it was toward that goal, to where you've added Franmil Reyes, a piece to the lineup, who is pre-arb, which is a huge asset to the roster. You added Logan Allen, who is a top 100 prospect, as you mentioned. So the idea of trading Francisco Lindor will remain an intriguing one because of the packages that he could demand. That being said, the Indians may be in a position to ride it out and take the drafted compensation. I think that's probably the most likely scenario at this moment, but it all depend on what kind of out-of-the-box offers the Indians might get over the next 2 years.
Right, yeah. And they could get absolutely blown away by something we just don't know, obviously, yet, because we're not sorcerers or wizards or whatever, so we can't see the future completely. But it is worth reminding, one thing we do know is that the Indians did extend Terry Francona in April through the 2022 season. So if there's a rebuild at some point, maybe that's when it is. But Ryan, do you want to react to some stupid ideas I have to close out the podcast this time?
Absolutely.
Okay, here's my first stupid idea. Before we started recording, the Mets fired Mickey Callaway as their manager. I think the Indians should try and bring him back. I know Carl Willis did a really good job this season, but the one coach they're not bringing back to the staff is their bullpen coach. And I know Willis is not a bullpen coach, and I know that Mickey Callaway was not a bullpen coach when he was in Cleveland. But my opinion is try and bring him back and have him figure it out somehow. I don't care. What are your thoughts on that stupid take?
Well, Mickey and Carl, I think, both have pretty tremendous reputations as pitching coaches.
Yes.
They both have track records. They've both done very well. You know, Mickey's time in New York had some ups and some downs, a lot of downs. You know, this wasn't a total surprise or anything. I think that's a situation where you probably have to choose one. I think that they are both too highly regarded within the industry to be on the same staff and to kind of share some things.
Yeah.
If they could do that, that's a total win for the Indians. Yes, they should try to do that. But that'd be quite the move if they're able to pull that off.
Mm. We'll see with that one. I don't think it'll happen, but I want it to happen. Stupid idea number two. The Indians MVP for 2019 was Carlos Santana. Agree or disagree?
It's certainly not a stupid idea. You know, especially the key aspect of Carlos Santana's 2019 season is that he was the one hitter who really got off to a scorching start and maintained it while the Indians were really floundering offensively. You know, it's one guy in a 9-man lineup. You know, baseball is an extreme team sport. Without Carlos Santana, though, you know, the Indians may have been, I mean, they likely would have been buried to a larger degree than they were. The fact that they were able to dig themselves out of that hole and make it a race into September, make it a walk-up race into deep September, Carlos Santana is a huge part of that. It's either Santana or, you know, a couple of the guys in the rotation who stepped up, but I think Carlos Santana is very fair as the team's 2019 MVP. At a tremendous year, helped to carry this lineup, was one of the only consistent hitters all year. I think that's totally fair.
All right, here I have one more stupid idea, and this is probably the least stupid of the three, so that should tell you something going in here. But the Houston Astros will win the World Series beating the Dodgers. That's my World Series prediction. So do you have any guesses on your World Series pick?
No, that's not stupid at all. I picked the Yankees to win the World Series before the season.
Yeah.
The Astros adding Zach Greinke was just such a ridiculously great move. You know, the Indians have long been a team that might be a little more dangerous in the postseason than in the regular season because of that rotation, because you can lean on it and you're going to have to beat their best arms. That element is just elevated to the extreme with the Houston Astros, where you're going to have to go through Garrett Cole, then Justin Verlander, and then Zach Greinke. Not necessarily in that order, but the first two guys are going to finish 1 and 2 for the American League Cy Young Award. They might split the award because they're going to get all of the first place and second place votes, barring something really weird happening. But they're almost assuredly going to have, between them, 30 first place votes and 30 second place votes. So to get through those two guys, and then you still have to beat Zach Greinke, you still have to beat that lineup, that bullpen. It's really hard to bet against the Houston Astros. Then again, it's baseball. It's a sport that demands a larger sample size, and you're cramming it into 5 or 7 games, so strange things happen. But no, the Astros and the Dodgers, I think, have to be looked at as the two favorites right now, and that Astros roster is just so rock solid up and down that it's, you know, it's a tough thing to see an upset on paper with against this Astros team.
Yeah. So with that said, considering my baseball genius that I've displayed this season here on the podcast, it will be, I don't know, A's and Cardinals, or let's say, who knows?
Right. Right. Hey, you were on the right track with Clevinger. If he doesn't get hurt, he's at least in the Cy Young finalist discussion. At least if he doesn't get hurt. So. I think that's mostly a win for you. You can count that.
Thank you. I'm glad you remembered that, because I certainly will never forget.
What could have been?
What could have been? Oh, well, with that said, Ryan, anything else before we get out of here?
No, I think we came in just under the 6-hour time limit.
We did. Yeah. So
good work.
With that said, that concludes a season of Leading Off with Ryan Lewis. Thanks, everybody, who joined us throughout the year. I think we'll be back. We should be. Maybe when the Indians start making some moves or whatever, we'll be back then. But for now, make sure you're following Ryan on Twitter. He's at @ByRyanLewis. You can find all of his stuff over at ohio.com/Indians. There's more information about the Corey Kluber picking up his option. There's a lot more information about what the Indians might do with Franmil Reyes that's really interesting. So check that out, ohio.com/Indians. But thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk to you next time.